Today's episode is brought to you by the Handmade Book Club. The Handmade Book Club is a vibrant community of crafters who create their own handmade journals using modern materials and traditional techniques. Learn to combine your love of hand stitching and fabric into your own custom journals. Join our free bookbinding book camp at www.handmadebookclub.com. Thank you so much to the Handmade Book Club. And now, here's the show. Welcome to episode 258 of the Craft Industry Alliance podcast. I'm Abby Glassenberg. Craft Industry Alliance is a community for craft professionals where you can strengthen your creative business, stay up to date on industry news, and build connections within our supportive trade association. Check it out at craftindustryalliance.org. Today on the show, we're talking about creating a sewing business with my guest, Jess Barrera. Jess is an author, designer, educator, and entrepreneur, and she's been creatively sewing and crafting since the age of five. She studied entrepreneurship at the University of Wisconsin-Whitewater, and now operates her own sewing pattern and supply company, Sally Tomato. Her innovative designs and products aim to attract the next generation of sewing enthusiasts while appealing to current makers. Aside from running a business, she's a mom of two boys, loves coffee and home decorating, boutique shopping, traveling, yoga, being outdoors, and is a fan of classic black and white movies. Jess Barrera, welcome.
Thanks so much for having me, Abby. I'm excited to chat.
I'm excited to chat with you as well. So before we sort of dig into your story, I wondered if you could just start with the obvious question, which is where the name Sally Tomato came from. My guess is that people think your name is Sally.
Oh, all the time. And that's okay. Like at shows, I get called Sally and things. Sally is my middle name. And then tomato is a representation of a tomato pincushion for sewing. Sally Tomato is also a character from Breakfast at Tiffany's. And yeah, as you mentioned, I love classic movies. So it's fun to tie that in. And all the patterns I name are named after classic movies. So it's just kind of fun to pull inspiration from the decades of the movies and make more modern designs for today's sewists.
Yeah, that's great. And do you know anything about the history of the tomato pincushion? Like, why is it a tomato? Do you know anything about that? I don't know.
Oh, it's a good question. At one time I knew, but I have to look back into that again.
Okay. Yeah, I just wasn't sure. It has like a strawberry on, I don't know. The tomato pincushion is a whole another topic for another day. But where did you grow up? Did you grow up in Wisconsin? And I know you learned to sew when you were young.
Yes, I've lived in Wisconsin pretty much my whole life. And I grew up around Beaver Dam, and which was where Nancy Zeman had her store. And so I worked there, my mom and dad worked there. And so I've basically grew up in a quilt shop with a lot of moms and a lot of advice over the years, which was fun. And I love the Midwest and living here with my family.
And when you were younger, were you kind of an entrepreneurial kid? You know, some people, it's like their entrepreneurial spirit was there from birth and they were always trying to have a lemonade stand or sell scrunchies at school or things like that. Or did that come later for you?
Sure. I would say I've always had an interest in business and fashion and teaching. So all of my interests have kind of blended together. And once I was pursuing a degree in college, my college began to offer entrepreneurship and decided to follow my dream and major in that. So the opportunity came from that, I think.
Yeah, that's interesting. And when you were sewing as a kid, what kinds of things did you enjoy making?
So I tried it all. I did quilts and I embroidered. I did jewelry making. I even did welding. So scrapbooking, all kinds of things. And I always come back to sewing. There's something about sewing that's so rewarding. And so it's just stuck with me my whole life.
And when you were sort of in high school, did you think you wanted like an artistic career? It sounds like you focused on entrepreneurship in college. Were you thinking of going to art school ever? Or, you know, what were you thinking in high school about your future?
Yeah, so in high school, I thought a lot about art. I did some summer programs and I even went to MIAD in Milwaukee and the Savannah College of Art and Design for a few months one summer. I really was interested in fashion, but then there was this other part of me that, you know, thought, okay, Jess, you got to get a realistic job here. And so then I was leaning more towards teaching and becoming an elementary ed teacher. And I student taught for a while and I'm a very soft-spoken person, so I thought I couldn't control the classroom with the little kids as much as I wanted to, and I just didn't think I would do them a good justice as a teacher. So now instead I teach adults. And yeah, so I'm glad that I still get to teach, which I absolutely love, and starting to teach my sons a little bit of sewing and crafting too. But
Yeah, I hear you with the classroom management part of teaching. It's so challenging. And it even for people who really love teaching, when it comes to teaching, especially younger kids or even high, certainly middle and high school kids, so much of it is really around managing the class. And that can sort of make it difficult to focus on the part of it that you are excited about.
it's so true.
Okay, so you majored in entrepreneurship. Am I right about that in college? That's what you ended up focusing on. Okay. And so after college, or while you were in college, I mean, when did this business begin? Was it right after college? Was it in college? Or how did the evolution of Sally Tomato start?
Sure. So, still very crafty in college, and on the side, I decided to start sewing some things and list them on Etsy to make some extra money. And I was making these dog beds with an attached blanket. Which was inspired by my dog, was always cold, and they're really good sellers. And my mom noticed how hard I was working while I was studying and then also working a part-time job on top of a side hustle. And so she suggested, why not write some instructions and teach people how to make the dog beds? And so I did, and I posed my dog for the front cover of the pattern and just printed it out on my computer and put it in a nice Ziploc bag. And then I pitched the pattern to Nancy's Notions and they put it in their catalog and it was really well received. They sold 1,000 copies in the first month. So obviously I was hooked on this pattern writing. And so I started going more towards bags. I love like the three-dimensional design and the challenge of incorporating the hardware and the unique fabrics. And at the time, a lot of the bag patterns were more patchwork and a lot of quilt cottons. And I was intrigued by, the unique faux leathers and the use of cork in designer bags and the hardware. So I looked into sourcing some hardware and I knew that if I was going to be writing patterns, I'd want to have the supplies to go with it. So that way it was easy for the customer and they didn't have to hunt around for these unique pieces of hardware. So I started a little collection on top of my dorm room dresser with little bins of hardware. And yeah, just continued selling through Nancy's. And I think because of that connection and growing up basically with the company too, I got along with the buyer really well. And she, let me know about distributors, which I had no idea the industry behind sewing. And so I contacted Checker and they accepted some of my patterns and hardware. And yeah, it's just kind of grown and grown over the years. And it's just so by the time I graduated, I decided to work full time for myself and just really focus on my business. And my brother started helping me on the side. And it was out of my house for the first 3 years that we were running the business. So it's amazing
Yeah.
how
Yeah, it
life
is
can go.
amazing. And there's so many amazing aspects of this story. I mean, one of them is that this was a college dorm room business, and that, you know, when you graduated, you were able to sort of go headfirst into it and really build it. And so didn't really have that. A lot of people I have on the show, they're like, after college, I worked in this corporate job, or I was doing something I didn't really enjoy or whatever, but I learned some things and then I wanted to do something creative. But you didn't have that story. You actually built something that was like a fledgling business in college and then grew it into a full-time business that you've been doing ever since. I think that's pretty rare.
Yeah, I think it is a rare opportunity that I had, and the timing was, you know, really nice to be able to, you know, lean on being in college and working part-time and not have to have all those other expenses involved yet in the other full-time jobs. So yeah, I'm really grateful for how it worked out.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And then the other piece too, I think is really interesting, is that you started with a paper pattern. It wasn't, you were selling the dog beds, but the completed dog beds on Etsy, they were selling really well. And your mom suggested maybe you should make a pattern, but you didn't start with a digital file then on Etsy, which is where I thought that story was going to go. But instead, you printed the pattern out, put it in a bag and all that, and then started with Nancy's Notions, which is an unusual beginning, because most people, I feel like, in the independent pattern world, they launch a pattern or two digitally, and then they sort of build up to having a paper pattern.
Yeah, I think it really helped having that relationship established, and networking has really been key to growing Sally Tomato. And yeah, so we attended a trade show while I was in college too. We went to Quilt Market. And
we mean you and your mom, or you and your brother?
Oh, me and my mom. Yep.
Okay. So you went to Quilt Market while you were in college?
Yes. Yes.
Was your mom like part of the industry in some way? Like, how did she even know about it?
We heard about it through the buyer from Nancy's Notions.
Okay. So that was really an important relationship. Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you and your mom went to Quilt Market during, and then made some new connections that way and sort of learned about the industry. That's interesting. Yeah. And so going to shows and networking has been, it sounds like, a really important part of building this business from the start.
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
Yeah.
Definitely would recommend that.
Right. And Nancy's Notions is such an important part of sort of the modern sewing industry. And we had Nancy Zeman on the podcast before she passed away. I feel so fortunate to have had the opportunity to talk with her. This was after she had sold the business, but it's still, you know, it's now owned by Missouri Star and is still very much surviving and thriving. So so that's really fabulous. And it's a Wisconsin, you know, sort of homegrown brand. So really great that you were connected with them. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So you had said you were interested, you started with a dog bed. It's not what you do now. You said you were always interested in fashion. And I wondered whether bag design is specifically not kind of the patchwork kind of, you know, quilting cotton bags, but instead more what I would call like fashion bags, like faux leathers and cork, as you mentioned, whether some of the appeal of that is the fashion side of it.
Yeah, for sure. And we definitely now, and I also at the beginning have looked at, you know, fashion trends in the runway to, you know, pull inspiration with unique materials into the patterns. But fashion design itself, I haven't dove into. I think it's a little intimidating with a lot of pattern pieces in there and getting it to fit properly. So that's why I really like the bags, because of the specific unique shapes and trying to get those to fit. So I definitely admire fashion designers and fashion apparel pattern designers as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And the nice thing about handbags and shoes and jewelry is that for women, at least, whatever, if you're a larger size, if you've gone down some sizes, if you know, if your shape has changed over time from having children or surgery or whatever your life might be, you can almost always buy a new pair of shoes, a new necklace or earrings, and a handbag, or make those things as well. And they always fit. And so there's something also like universally appealing. And you were talking about fashion garment pattern designers having to really worry a lot about fit. And you don't have to worry about that in handbag design.
Yeah, that's so true. And I love how personal, you know, a bag is too. I mean, we try to leave little elements in so you can customize and add more pockets or change the strap. And because it is a challenge to design bags when everybody has a personal preference on the features of the bag and how it's carried. And so it's been a learning curve to try to adapt the patterns and make them easy for everybody.
Yeah. So what was the first bag pattern and how did that one do when you sort of started to shift gears toward bags from dog beds?
Yes. So I started with a tote bag and then my second pattern was a crossbody bag. So I guess I considered the most popular styles and types of bags. And I started out with those and I kind of wanted to checklist and create each type of bag as a pattern. So then I moved on to a backpack and a wallet and just to try to have a nice variety of styles available. And then from there, I listened to feedback about the tote and, you know, maybe they wanted more pockets or different handles. So then, you know, I came up with a different pattern and they've evolved over the years to be more custom like that.
And how did you teach yourself this craft? Because it's one thing to learn to sew when you're young and to sew, you know, as a hobby over time. And I think even sewing a dog bed, it's like, okay, it's like a big square rectangle with flaps. Like I get it, like how to do it. But bags, the construction of bags is like a mind puzzle in my mind, at least from the ones that I've made, where you have to really think about how am I going to get this turned right side out? How am I going to get these pockets on here so everything's neat? How, you know, there's like a lot of sort of three-dimensional thinking, I guess. So I wondered how you learned. Did you learn by watching YouTube? Trial and error, looking at other designers' bags, sewing through a whole book of bags, or how did you figure this out?
Yes. So I am self-taught in pattern design. So I love research. So I have lots of books on bag making. I like got all the patterns that I could possibly get and, you know, watched YouTube videos. And I looked at the patterns in the books to figure out techniques, like how do you do this type of pocket? And then I have like a whole encyclopedia binder of like all different kinds of, you know, flaps and pockets and bases. And so that was really good in the beginning. And now I've come up with my own techniques just from trial and error and prototyping. And usually when I prototype, I sew up the sample and then I don't like being wasteful with my prototypes. So then I'll just like take it apart and rework it and rework it the same one over and over until I get it right. But yeah, there's definitely a lot of math and I do love math. And I've noticed the same thing with quilting too, tons of math. So, and then another thing that I started working in as I was sourcing the hardware, I'd come across these unique ones and or think of unique ones. And then I'd work those into design and design around the hardware itself too. So yeah, I guess it either starts with the bag type or a specific feature that I want to include. And generally when I design, I try not to go overboard because I have so many ideas. So if I try to keep it pretty basic and then incorporate one new feature in the pattern. So that way, otherwise you could keep adding on all these different hardwares and pockets. And then it's this really challenging bag. And making it as beginner friendly as possible has always been at the core of the business as well, just to appeal to all skill levels of sewists. So I've learned over the years that I do more beginner patterns than the more challenging patterns, I guess.
Right, because they have broader appeal and it's a lot of work. So it's best to probably focus generally on things that are going to sell the best, and beginner patterns are probably that, at least in today's market, the way that sewing works today. Yeah, absolutely. And do you ever retire patterns? So that first tote bag and then the second crossbody, are they still around? Or do you ever look back through the archive of your patterns and say, okay, it's time to either retire this one, we have a better version, or we're going to renew this one, kind of, you know, redo all the instructions, redo all the samples, bring them up to today's standard?
Yeah. So we've never discontinued any patterns. We've just gone back, updated the techniques and some of the language and relaunched them as new versions. So, because they're still like great basic shapes, but it's definitely worth going back and updating them just to keep it up to our current standard and weeks.
I want to take a minute now to talk about our sponsor, the Handmade Book Club. And here is a message from the Handmade Book Club. The Handmade Book Club was created by Ali Manning of Vintage Page Designs in 2019. We are an online community of crafters from all over the world who love to create our own journals. Our members are quilters, stitchers, knitters, mixed media artists, painters, and printmakers. Each month, we create a new bookbinding project together, welcome guest artists, and tour amazing craft studios. Additionally, we have many online community events, member-led live meetups, and an annual retreat. If you'd like to dip your toes into the world of bookbinding, join us for our latest 5-day challenge. It runs from March 11th through 15th, 2024, and is called the Scrappy Journal Challenge. It's designed as an introduction to handmade books and to help you use up scraps of paper and fabric you have lying around your studio. You'll learn some great bookbinding skills while putting a dent in your stash. Crafters of all types, fiber and textile artists, painters, art journalers, knitters, are all welcome to take the challenge. The pre-recorded video instructions are easy to follow, and daily live Q&As ensure your success. Plus, you'll be joining an incredibly vibrant online book arts community that's filled with encouraging and inspiring artists and crafters from all over the world. You're sure to make your next best crafting bestie here. It begins March 11th, so go to www.handmadebookclub.com to join and use the code CIA to receive 50% off the price of the challenge. Thank you so much to the Handmade Book Club. And now back to my conversation with Jess. Okay. And so I'd love to talk about those first 3 years. You mentioned your brother had come on to help. Your mom was obviously helpful as well, and that the business was based out of your home at that time. So did you have like a starter apartment, like your first place after college, and that's where it was located? And what was it like in those early days?
Yep. So after I moved out of the dorms, I was in an apartment, and there was a spare bedroom that I had some of my supplies in. And then after that, my husband and I purchased our first home, and he let me have the basement for the business and the garage and the spare bedroom. So he was very supportive, and that's when my brother started helping once we were at our house. So then once we found out we were going to have our first son, we had to move to a bigger home. We moved closer to family, so then my mom could help a little bit more. And again, he let me have the garage and the basement and the den and the living room and part of the upstairs, and the business was everywhere. So then it was really time to separate the business from home at that point, especially with the baby on the way. So I rented a storefront downtown in the town that we were at to fulfill orders. And then for excess storage, we had purchased some shipping containers to put on our property. So we'd run back and forth. And I've kind of taken baby steps over the years and was always hesitant to invest in a big space. But we've really outgrown those two. So then we reached out to the city to see if there were any grants available for building a warehouse in our industrial park. And we're in a small town, which I think has helped as well, because I know a lot of local business owners, and the mayor, his wife is actually a customer of ours. So networking again and building those relationships locally helped with building our warehouse. So now everything is officially out of the house, and we have our office and our separate warehouse.
And how did that change your relationship to the business, your feelings about the business, your mindset as a business owner? I think it's very different feeling when you have everything in your living space and you can just go Saturday night at midnight and do something, versus everything's in a warehouse that's not in your home. And in some ways, it's like working hours. You may have staff there you have to supervise or be in touch with. And so it's like, you know, at the end of the workday, you leave. And in the beginning of the workday, you go there. And I imagine that internally, that shifts your sort of understanding of the business and your relationship to it.
Yes. Yeah. I could talk a lot about this. I mean, I think it has definitely helped, like, just for my health as a person too, just to have that separation. And because initially when it was out of my first home before my brother started helping, I was working 120 hour weeks. Like, it's just impossible. I'd get up at 6 a.m, I'd pack orders, film some videos in the afternoon, catch up with emails. I mean, it was just like constant. And I mean, I loved it. It was fun and I had the time to do it. And, you know, I utilized the best my time that I could. And so then, yeah, it was kind of scary to hire somebody at first too. And so luckily my brother was available and willing to help. And from there, we hired one of our friends. So, you know, finding people that you trust to help with your business was always, you know, difficult to do. And so then now it's very nice because I'm a 40-hour week and it's like a regular job now with lots of help, and kind of just saw the needs where, you know, of the business. And, you know, we need somebody for handling the social media and the emails. And so then we hired for that. And, you know, so as we grow, we're trying to branch off from our roles and figure out how to hire from there. But hiring, that really wasn't something that was taught in college. So, I mean, a lot of this information is just from experience.
And does it feel, I mean, I don't know where your risk tolerance is, but it's risky to build a warehouse. I mean, that's a huge investment. I mean, even if you get a grant, it's a lot to do. And there's always that feeling like maybe things won't work out. And then I've done this and now what, you know, or same thing with hiring people where their livelihood is now dependent on your success. And if things don't work out, well, then they don't have money for their family. And, you know, so I don't know whether that's easy for you. And some entrepreneurs I speak with are like, yeah, I love roller coasters and I'm always taking risks. And others are more like me, which is to say very risk averse. So I don't know how you feel about that.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. And I think it's about, you know, managing risk and being selective about the risks that you take. Cause yeah, when I was initially investing in the hardware, I was able to find a source that I could order lower quantities, but then for custom pieces, you have to buy 500 or 1,000. And that was a huge risk for me. And I made sure to have a marketing plan in place for when I chose to purchase that 500 quantity and, you know, to make sure that it's sold. And I think we still take risks as a new business too, and with new products. And it's just kind of a balancing act between the risks and then, you know, spacing it out before you take your next risk.
And did you stick with print patterns? So that first one was a print pattern that you sold to Nancy's Notions. Was the second one also straight to print? And the third one straight to print, has it always gone that way? Or when did you sort of shift into offering a digital file? And do those ever come first before because a lot of folks will say, well, let me see how it sells digitally. And the ones that do the best, I'll select from there and make those in print. Since it's an investment, you usually have to buy, you know, a certain minimum number to make it really worthwhile to print them and all of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I did have the PDF patterns online alongside. So once I went into the patterns, I didn't put them on Etsy. I decided to have my own website at that point. That way on the patterns, when I could reference my website and not the Etsy store, I always tried to think long term with that. So I made sure to get all my social media accounts claimed as my own as well once I set up my website. And I just kind of had the website living there, and I was doing a lot more with the distributors and wholesale in the beginning too.
Yeah. So wholesale was part of this business from the start. Is it still part of this business now? I mean, would you say wholesale is an equal amount to direct to consumer, or is one larger than the other at this point?
Sure. So I'd say the online business is about 60%, and then the wholesale distributor side is about 40%. We try to involve the local stores as much as possible. And in every video, we reference shop local for all of your supplies and your patterns. We have a retailer locator on our website just to try to promote local. But with today's, online world, I mean, we would like to be a resource for education, mainly online, and inspiration on our social media channels to connect with the customer and build the brand online, and then send them to the stores to shop. So that's kind of like our long-term goal. And I know how important it is to shop local and how hard the local store owners work to keep, their stores going with classes and trunk shows and all that. So I always keep them in mind too.
Yeah. And I think local retailers really appreciate designers who are collaborative and are trying to support them and support the whole ecosystem of sewing. So I think that that's probably a really good attitude to have. What about selling wholesale internationally? Because that can be a different ball game if you want to sell into Europe or into Australia and New Zealand, for example. Do you have a distributor in, that's international that helps with that?
Mm-hmm. So what we have done is we've sold direct internationally. We've talked to a few distributors, but we haven't ever set up an account with them. As of recently, though, we decided to just distribute exclusively through Checker. We're really excited about the partnership because then we can work with their sales reps and, provide them marketing materials. And we felt that we were getting spread a little bit too thin between having multiple distributors and managing our wholesale accounts through Sally Tomato. So that was a very recent decision, but we're excited about it, because it was being a challenge to have three different customer types between the direct consumer or wholesale on our website and then through the distributors.
Yeah, that's a lot to keep track of. Yeah. And have you looked at selling on Fair at all, or is that not in your scope?
We did for a while, but we're not going to anymore, because that was a good resource for international sales. We did see quite a few from France and I think Sweden coming through there as well. So,
okay, but not anymore. And then I'd love to talk a little bit about product development, because I think, and I hope I'm remembering this correctly, when you were at H&H Americas this past year, you were maybe on a panel about product development. And so I think you have some insights to share there. So have you developed some products that are exclusive to Sally Tomato, maybe hardware or things like that? And how did that go at the beginning, and kind of what have you learned along the way with product development?
Yeah. So there are several global trading sites available, and that's how I first got started. And you can talk directly with manufacturers. Some manufacturers have a catalog to choose from. And then I would, with the zippers, for example, I was explaining and, samples and referencing, sizes. We use the Pantone colors to make sure that we get the colors how we want it. And that seems to be the most universal, code for color. And I think one of the biggest challenges was the packaging and just communicating that, because I would get the raw materials in, and then we would have to figure out the packaging, how to have it displayed nicely in a store. And so researching that was a challenge too, but it's a lot of testing and getting samples in and revising, and usually there's a language barrier too. So then it's really difficult to communicate, the changes sometimes, but it's a very long process.
Right. You can't be rushed. And have you learned certain things about packaging that work better than others? Maybe the packaging for some of the core products has evolved over time based on retailer feedback or returns or things like that.
We try to make sure that all of our packaging is recyclable. So our packaging hasn't changed a whole lot over the years. The hardware specifically has changed. We used to just put it in Ziploc bags and to protect it a little bit more, we now have it in like a plastic clam package.
Okay.
And then with the fabrics, we always roll them for protections because you can't fold cork fabric or faux leather. It'll leave the creases in it. Certainly listening to the customer feedback was important and making some adjustments.
And you really love cork and cork fabric. And I wondered, I think cork is a pretty unusual fabric or material. I mean, I think bag makers love it. Not a ton of other sewists necessarily have it on hand. So maybe you can talk a little bit about the properties of cork and why you like it and how you use it in your designs.
So I would actually consider cork fabric a very beginner-friendly material because you can leave it raw edge and don't have to add a lining if you don't want to. So it's been really popular for wallets that you sew all the pieces together and don't have to turn it right side out when you're done. So it is real cork. It's a thin layer of cork adhered to a fabric support backing, and can sew with it just on your home sewing machine. I always recommend a Microtex needle. It's great because it has some nice body to it for the bottom of bags, and it'll wear better than like normal cotton or canvas would. So having it on the bottom and on the straps is really nice for accents. Since it is real cork and it takes a very long time to make, it is quite expensive. But since you only need a little bit usually, then it's worth the investment because you spend so much time making your project and you want to have those quality materials.
Yeah. And does it just come in that cork color that we're thinking of, the sort of warm brown, or is cork now something that you can get in multiple colors or even with patterns printed on it?
Oh, absolutely. So there you can get solid colors. We have a whole rainbow of colors. And then we've tried a variety of printing processes in sublimation and to get the ink and design printed onto cork. So we have a variety of corks, and we've tested a variety of backings as well. So we've tested micro suede and canvas on the back and even burlap. So there's some really creative designs out now.
Okay. And is there a specific bag design that has been a bestseller like over time? You know, the one that sort of, I feel like in most businesses, there's one pattern or one product that sort of really has been a long-term bestseller.
Yes, so our Ferris fanny pack pattern is our most popular pattern. And I understand because it's so convenient and your hands free, and it's just the right size for essentials. So we have a couple other fanny packs out now. And then second to that are the wallet patterns.
And fanny packs have had a resurgence. I feel like now people wear them as a crossbody,
Absolutely.
which is kind of great. Yeah, I love them. So let's talk a little bit about trade shows. So we mentioned that you were at H&H, you went to Quilt Market really early on. Tell us a little bit about your trade show strategy. Do you have a booth? Do you just walk the show? What are your goals when you're at a trade show? Do you go to multiple shows a year, or what is your strategy when it comes to going to trade shows?
So like I mentioned before, networking is super important to me. So making it around to all of the booths and talking to the other designers there as well, and possibly, figuring out if there's an opportunity for collaboration. So that's probably the number one thing. And then for the booth itself, it's always been a challenge. We choose to drive because our hardware and our fabrics, they all need to be displayed on some kind of wall fixture. So we've chosen to use grid wall. And It's not ideal to ship our things with them being so heavy. And so we have a trailer that we drive and do the setup and making sure that you have really nice signs with everything labeled and educational flyers along with to teach about your products is really important. Since we have so many products now, it's always a challenge to bring a little bit of everything. But we try to have a representation of a little bit of everything there and our top sellers. Kits have been something that we never, you know, knew from the beginning that would be so helpful to have all the pieces together in one package to make a project, to take that guesswork out. So that has been really successful for us too.
Yeah, I think kits are great. I think, kits really saw a resurgence during the pandemic when it was very difficult to go to multiple stores to collect supplies for a particular project. And also you couldn't necessarily go to any stores at all. So just getting everything shipped straight to your home all in one place was really helpful. But I generally think kits are great for, especially if you're starting a new craft where you don't necessarily Yes. know what to buy or how much of anything to buy and what quality level to invest in and things like that. So it all comes as one. And then if you like doing it, maybe you'll go back out and invest, you know, more in those particular supplies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. Kits are great.
Another thing too is having a space for demos. So we always bring hardware in our zippers to show how to use it because it out of the package, it's really nice for the customer to be able to experience it in person and answer their questions when you're there with them.
Yeah, absolutely. And because you are selling to so many retailers, it does make sense for you to go to trade shows and educate retailers in person there where they have the opportunity to touch the materials and ask you questions and learn from you so that when they do order and go back to their stores, they are educated and able to help their consumers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. So I would love to talk a little bit about social media. You do a great job on social media. You have, I think the last time I looked, it was something like 30,000 people. Maybe it's more than that now on Instagram. And you're on TikTok now as well, which I thought was pretty great. So if you can talk a little bit about the way you approach social media, what you're trying to do there and how you get it done.
Sure. So we try to post a reel every day. And with the algorithm, you know, leaning more towards video content, we decided to invest our time into making the reels every day. We try to share behind the scenes as well. Each social media platform we allocate towards a different purpose, I guess. So then, you know, we use Instagram as a tool to build relationships and share behind the scenes. And then Facebook has proved to, you know, do better at selling. So then we post more sale information on Facebook. And then Pinterest is more tutorials. We defined each of the platforms. And then because we have so many products, we decide, you know, on Tuesdays we post about zippers and, you know, Thursdays maybe we do a sewing tip on cork. And so we have it all outlined with a schedule just to make sure to hit on each topic every week as well. So it's constantly evolving too, which is a challenge. And I would like to take our team to some marketing conferences. There was a great social media presentation at H&H as well that was really helpful, just to try to always keep learning about what's going on online and stay on top of the latest trends in social media.
Yeah. Are you appearing in all of those reels? Because man, a reel every day. That seems ambitious to me. And I don't know about you. I mean, you're on camera a lot. You're on your YouTube channel. You're on camera a lot. How comfortable do you feel being on camera? You had talked earlier about being a fairly soft-spoken person. Was it hard for you to get comfortable if you are appearing in all of those reels or in the YouTube channel and things like that? Or does that come naturally to you?
I think it's still every day I work on getting out of my comfort zone a little bit more and, I mean, it kind of helps with the reels or tutorials that if you need to redo it, you know, nobody's there watching. So, you know, you can redo it as many times as you need to. And it's all in the editing a lot of times, which is helpful for, you know, my confidence. But we do have a couple other team members that like to be in the reels and we try to incorporate our team and have our audience connect with our entire team as well. but it's, we usually batch content. So I'll take a day a week and create, you know, the next 2 weeks of reels and get them all edited and scheduled, which is really helpful.
Yeah. It sounds like you are pretty good at the planning process and planning in advance. Do you have like pattern release plans for the year? Are you working a year in advance when it comes to thinking about that, or product release, you know, release schedule?
Right. So, I mean, when I first started, I would just work, you know, on a month at a time. And now we're already looking into 2025 and planning. And I wish in some sense that it wasn't so planned out, because if, you know, a new trend pops up or we get this idea, it's really hard with, it puts a strain on the entire team now to have to go all hands on deck to push out another idea. So we've really gone to, you know, having a thorough marketing plan and, you know, theming the month around, you know, a certain theme or holiday or season is fun to do. And we love working in Google platform, where it's just really collaborative and lots of spreadsheets and collaborative documents and stuff like that to get it all planned out.
And about how many people work for Sally Tomato now, like overall?
There's about 30 of us.
That's amazing. I mean, congratulations to you. This was your college dorm room business, and now you have 30 employees. Like, that's incredible. So I just think, yeah, such an inspiring business story. And I would love to get your recommendations before it's time to end. And you wanted to recommend webbing for purse straps. I love webbing as well. I actually just bought some rainbow webbing, which is very cool.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, webbing has been fairly new to Sally Tomato, and it's something to elevate the look of your bag. It looks more, you know, like a bag that you would find at a boutique. And it also saves time because you don't have to, you know, use any interfacing or do any stitching to assemble the strap. You just can cut a piece and finish the edges and attach it to your bag. So
yeah, it's and a it really comes fun in product. It comes in all different colors. It also comes in different materials and thicknesses. So you can really get custom there with what you want. Okay. And then you wanted to also recommend faux leather in new textures.
Yes. So faux leather is really popular because of the price point, and there's some really neat textures that we've developed. We have a new weave, we have a shimmer, and then a more rugged, earthy looking texture as well. And all of them are tested to be able to work well on a home sewing machine. And so that's fun to develop those. And usually we have new ones come out every year. And so it's just fun to try. If you've never tried it, you could try it on a strap just to see how you like it. And that'll help with the durability of your bag as well.
And these faux leathers are fabrics that you are developing and sourcing. So they're not things you can necessarily walk into Joanne or something and buy. They're exclusive to you.
Yes. Yep. We come up with the designs and the colors and work with the manufacturer to make them, produce them.
Yeah, that's super cool. So people should definitely go check that out. And then you also wanted to recommend one more thing, which is painting landscapes.
Yeah. So sometimes it's nice just to have a side craft for like a palette cleanser. And so I've been really drawn to painting lately, and especially with my sons. I'm very thankful that they like to craft with me and they really like to paint. So I'll set them up with a painting project, and then I'll be able to work on mine as well as they're being creative. And so it's kind of a nice palette cleanser between, you know, bigger sewing projects and stuff.
Yeah. And it's not business related, which is kind of nice. I feel like when you turn your, you know, hobby, which is sort of what this was for you, into a business, it's difficult to then do that same craft as your hobby again.
Yeah. And when I do have the opportunity to sew, since I've gone to a lot of operation, you know, management of the business, and it's very special when I do get that time to be creative and work on content or a new sewing pattern. And I'm thinking that that's just a phase right now in the business. And then I would like to get back to more designing and more creative things with the business too. So
yeah, because how much time do you actually get to design and sew at this point?
Yeah, it sounds terrible, but usually I don't get to sew until the tutorials, and I film maybe every other week. So not as much as I would like to. And yeah, it's more just, you know, managing the team and working on social media and things like that. But
yeah, right. You sort of transition into a CEO role.
Mm-hmm, exactly. So
yeah.
Someday I'll get back into
well, and how, I mean, I think there's a lot of creativity in that role as well. Mm-hmm. If you can sort of see it that way and think about managing the business as a creative act, then it doesn't feel so much like you've gotten away from being creative.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, so, well, Jess, this has been great. Thank you so much for taking the time to share your story on the Craft Industry Alliance podcast.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate the opportunity, and I hope somebody's inspired by the story.
Oh, absolutely. And you've been listening to the Craft Industry Alliance podcast. I'm Abby Glassenberg. Today's episode was brought to you by the Handmade Book Club. Don't forget to check out their free bookbinding bootcamp at www.handmadebookclub.com. And remember, you get 50% off their latest challenge using that code CIA. Thank you so much to the Handmade Book Club. Craft Industry Alliance is a community for craft professionals. When you become a member of Craft Industry Alliance, you get in-depth coverage of craft industry news, the opportunity to connect with fellow professionals for advice and support, and access to an educational library filled with ideas, tools, and resources to help you as you build your business. Join us at craftindustryalliance.org. Thank you so much, and I'll see you next time.